Good evening and welcome to the first presentation in our seventh year of the series Faraway Places with Strange Sounding Names. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at Western Kentucky University, I coordinate this series with my colleague Peggy Wright over there. Assisting us tonight is our reference coordinator Brian Carson, and our technical specialist is Jason Hatman. Our speaker tonight is a native of Tianjin, a city of approximately 11 million people about an hour's train ride from Beijing. As an infant, he moved with his mother and three siblings to the city from a village in Hebei province to join his father, who had found work in the textile industry. Following primary school, his schooling was delayed when the Great Cultural Revolution took place. After finishing school, he won admittance to Nankai University, one of China's most prestigious, which had just begun admitting students by examination, a process abolished by Chairman Mao for more than a decade. After graduation, he became a lecturer of English at the university before being selected to study American Studies at Shanghai International University. In 1988, he arrived in the United States with Fulbright support as a graduate student in history at Indiana University. While working on his PhD, he became interested in library science and the newly emerging World Wide Web. With an MA and MLS from Indiana University, he found employment as a media specialist at an Episcopal school in Florida. In 1997, he was hired as the coordinator of the Educational Resources Center here at Western Kentucky University. The next year, he was promoted to a new position as the library's very first website and virtual library coordinator. His websites have been honored with several awards from the International Association of Webmasters and Designers. His personal websites on Chinese culture have been frequently used for reference and been cited by such national media as CNN and Britannica Online. Since 2000, he has returned to China once or twice a year to give lectures, attend conferences, and conduct research. He was instrumental in developing an exchange program with Chungking University. He is the author of two books and numerous articles, and contributed 26 articles to the new Encyclopedia of Contemporary Chinese Culture. In May of this year, The Magic Lotus Lantern and Other Tales from the Han Chinese was published by Libraries Unlimited, an imprint of Greenwood Publishing. He's presently at work on a second book that will cover folk tales of the other ethnic groups in China. When not researching, designing websites, or teaching Chinese, Haiwan enjoys cooking, dancing, and singing. And in 2005, he was profiled in the Job of a Lifetime column in College and Research Libraries News. Knowing him has enriched all of our lives. Please welcome our friend and colleague, Haiwan Wan.
Thank you.
Okay, now, China actually is a multi-ethnic nation. Very, very colorful, very diversified country. So it has officially recognized 56 ethnic groups. The Han Chinese is the majority group because it has
91%
of the 1.3 billion Chinese. So that's a lot. And the rest of them make up the other 55 minor ethnic groups. But in fact, there are not only 55. They're only recognized by the Chinese government. A lot more are not yet recognized. So they're still trying, including the Chinese Jews, which number somewhere like 2,000 to 8,000 today, even. The ethnic minorities, most of them live in the border regions of China, and some of them even up on the mountains. A lot of them have very small population, and mostly they are even today, are very poor. The place, a province called Yunnan, it's one of the southernmost provinces in China, bordering Laos, Burmese, and Burma, and Vietnam. That province has the most ethnic groups. It has almost 52 of the 56 ethnic groups today. And 26 of them had a population over 5,000 each. And 16 of them were unique just to that province. Find nowhere else those 16 ethnic groups. You can only find them in Yunnan province. So if you want to study Chinese ethnicity, and that's the place to go. And that's the place I just came back 2 months ago. And took a lot of pictures too. Okay. They claim that this is one of the new ethnic group they just found. It's called the Ke Mu. And of course, these guys are commercialized. They train them so that they can make money. So that's very bad, very sorry for them. Some of them, are, of course, are living in the mountains. Let's come back to the ethnicity in history. This is China 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. This is in the central part of China, central China, Zhongyuan. There were a lot of tribes, two big ones. One is Hua, one is Xia. So they come together, inhabit that place. Their descendants will claim themselves as the descendants of Hua Xia. So the Chinese didn't call them the Han Chinese until very late. So they were known as the Hua Xia people. Even today, and the Chinese will claim themselves as the descendants of the Hua Xia. You will hear Hua Xia a lot. And then they regard all the people surrounding them as barbarians. And they gave them a lot of pejoratory names, even though they themselves didn't call them that way. They call themselves hundreds of names in history. These people were farmers. So their farming skills were more advanced than any others. And people over here basically were herdsmen, and people here were hunters or primitive farming, and not as advanced as those people. So that's why those people get bigger and bigger and bigger. Oh, the Chinese character wouldn't show, that's fine. There used to be Chinese characters here. Okay, so these Chinese, Hua Xia Chinese, called the so-called barbarians around them the Qiang and Yi and Rong and Di and Man, according to their locations. This is a map of the ethnicity of China today. Over here you will see this is where the Han Chinese, the majority ethnic group, live, even though they disperse everywhere, okay, even over there. That's due to Mao's efforts to relocate people during the Cultural Revolution over there, so you got a lot of Han people in there. Basically, this is some like a Kurdish Muslim. So there are people today trying to fight for independence. They call themselves the Eastern Turkestan. And one of the group was pronounced as the terrorist group, even by the United States government. And this over here is Tibetan. And so you see here, this is Yunnan. That's why they're so colorful. There's so many ethnic groups. So from the map you can see, right? And this is a very visual map, kind of like a stereotype. All of these people, the 50, you can count 56 officially recognized ethnic groups in their costumes, in their. This shows roughly where they live. So here you have a big, big concentration of the ethnic people. This is the Han. And the Han, they don't know what they wear. So today they wear all the Western clothes. Okay, T-shirts, shirts, Western suits. But they, during the Cultural Revolution, they all wore the Mao suits. And only have the green color, blue color, gray color. They will see just like a throng of people just that color. But today, they're more colorful, right? Uh-huh. And I brought some of the clothes here. This is a skirt of the Yi people. For a girl, not for me, okay? This is a hat also, not for me, it's for a girl. Uh-huh. And this is a kind of a top dress here. And then you have one piece, and then you can make a skirt. That's from one of the ethnic, it's called the Dai people. Okay? Even the Dai people has three branches. And the Yi people have 47 branches. And of the 47 branches, they have somewhere like 100 kinds of different clothes. You can see, you can imagine how colorful China would be, right? Okay, these are Tibetans I met in Beijing. In Beijing, in Kunming, in Shenzhen, they have theme parks. Have replicas of the culture. They have the buildings one-to-one. They use the same labor, the same material, and build in the same design. And then they bring in the original people to give shows, to give talks. So these are Tibetans, real Tibetans, young people. And then these are the Wa people. And these are found from the theme parks in Kunming, in South, in Yunnan. That's the Yi. That's a branch of the Yi. So two different branches of Yi. Now notice their hat. Their hat says something. This is a comb of a chicken, a rooster, because it's a legend goes that a young couple was courting when suddenly a demon came over trying to catch them. And then suddenly at that time a rooster did a cook-a-doodle-doo and drove away the monster. So from then on, to celebrate that, so they got this comb, hat, in there to commemorate the rooster. And this one has two little triangles. And a boy cannot just touch it. If you touch it, that means you propose to her. She will just shun you. Don't do that, that's rude. Unless she falls in love. And this is the real one. That one is kind of a showcase girl. That's a tour guide in the theme park. And this is the real one from a book. I just copied. This is the true, real one. You also see the comb. And these are tour guides from different ethnic groups. I know this one. This is from Miao. And this is from Mosul. They call themselves Mosul, but the Chinese government lumped them into the category of the Naxi ethnic group. This Mosul, recently they did a study. They find that the genes of the husbands are more close to the Tibetans, while the women are close to the Naxi. That's because this is the only ethnic group in China where the children do not recognize the father. It's a mother society. And the boys just go to live together during the night with the girl. And then they come back to their own home during the day for the rest of their life. And they don't have legal papers. If they say bye-bye, that's okay. And the children will be raised by the family of the girl, by the girl's family. Yeah. So it's a woman's world. It's called kind of a walking marriage. So Wun in Chinese, walking marriage. You have to walk back and forth. This is the Naxi people. Yeah, this is the Naxi people. And they lump them together as one ethnic group. Actually, they say, well, we're different. Whatever. And this is the Yi people. If this is
the girls, that's the boys. Okay? But that's only one of the 47 branches.
And this is the Miao people. They were very famous for their hairpiece, for the they're all silver, handed down by the mothers, grandmothers, and they can weigh as much as 20 pounds. The more you have, the richer you will, people will think of you, right? Because that's wealth. That's a symbol of wealth. I'm not sure what ethnic group this girl comes from, but I just took a picture of her. I will find out. So this is the Yi girl. See the dress here? See the dress here? Mm-hmm. But that's not hers. Okay, this is the real one. If that's the showcase one, right? But this is the real one, the real piece. They collected in the museum. They're all handmade. And sometimes the mother will hand it down to the girl. They will make that their whole life. And now it becomes very collectible. And a lot of foreign museums, they come to China and buy them before the Chinese realize how much they're worth. Uh-huh. So this is from another ethnic group. They worship the sun. So you will see the sun symbol behind their back. This is... The real costumes of their people. You see their characteristic of this kind of a hat, but this is a different branch, so they have different colors. You see the material here, and this is a real one I bought in the 1980s, early 80s, so you can pass around and see the material. But this is not from that group, but from a different group, but that material. It's a linen, I guess it's a linen. Okay, now this is interesting. You see, the modern China, they think so white is better than dark skin. So they use the foreign face, that mannequin, instead of a Chinese one.
to sell their clothes. And ironically, this ethnic group, they think black is good. You see? Okay, I show you this because there's a little story in there. I just heard from the trip. This is a girl who is wearing that type of a clothes. And that clothes is sold to tourists. And these people are the Thai people, the people who are wearing this. See those girls? That's remember those girls. And okay, it's a good time for me to tell a story. And the girl in the shorter skirt, longer dress, whatchamacallit?
The top.
And the Thai people, they have a shorter top, a longer skirt, right? They are two ethnic groups living side by side, and there's a nice story about it. And they told me, they said, you know why? I said, why? They said, well, there used to be one sister-in-law and a sister, the brother or sister, right? And a sister-in-law. And the sister-in-law, he bought a piece of cloth, but he wants to make the top for each of them. But accidentally, he cut it into two, but one piece is bigger than the other. So he's very selfless. She gave the longer piece to the sister, she kept the shorter piece. And then when the sister bought a piece of cloth another time and trying to make each a skirt, you know what she did? She intentionally cut the cloth one piece bigger than the other and gave the longer piece to the sister-in-law. So that's why she got a longer skirt and she got a shorter one. So that shows the ethnic people live in harmony for a long, long time. So that's a very, very nice story. Question and answers.
What about language? I guess I was under the understanding that the majority of the Chinese spoke a common language.
How
does that relate to the other?
Yeah, good. That's a very good question. She asked that, what about the language? The Han Chinese, but even though they have eight major dialects, and then they have each dialect has the branches, or if you walk 200 miles, people would speak differently. As Brian said, Beijing and Tianjin is only an hour train's way. In Beijing, they would say, 你好, or how are you? But in Tianjin, 你好吗? So it's different. In Shanghai, it will be totally different. In Canton, it's like a foreign language. But they are Mandarin Chinese. And the ethnic people, the other 55, most of them have oral language. Some of them have written languages. Some of them even have more than one language, like Mongolians and Dai. But some of them, you know, the Chinese government tried to create some for them, but they just don't like it. So they still, now they learn Mandarin Chinese. Did I answer your question? Okay, cool. Okay, let's go on. You see, this is my sister. We went there together. This is the guy. She's the Dai. You see the dress here? Just like that one, right? And that's the girl. So these two live side by side, and that's now you know why their skirts are longer and shorter. The top is longer, and that's shorter, right? That's very nice. The definition of Han. The Han Chinese used to be the Huaxia Chinese. They didn't call themselves Han until the time before the fall of the Qing Dynasty. It fell in 1911. So by the turn of the 20th century, people started to have the conscience, because the Qing Dynasty was from a minor nationality. It's the Manchus. So they ruled over the majority of Chinese for over 200 years. So now they started to think of their identity. So they said, hey, we were the descendants of a dynasty they call the Han, which is immediately after the Qing Dynasty. So that's why they call themselves Han. There's still a lot of confusions. You may have questions already. Let me try to answer them now. For instance, when you say Chinese, it could be a citizen from the People's Republic of China, or Huarun, a person of Chinese descent. Then he or she can be anywhere, in Taiwan, in America, in South Asia. Here's an analogy. When you say you are English, when you speak of a person who comes from the Great Britain and the Northern Islands, right? That's the name of the country. You say, people say, no, I'm a Welsh man, or I'm not English, right? See? When you talk to the Tibetans, you're Chinese. I'm Tibetan, right? I'm not Chinese. So, but politically, he's a Chinese, or... you're an American, yes or no, I'm an American citizen, but my parents came from Poland, right? That's the analogy. Now, Han still, sometimes, is used synonymously with the Chinese. When you say the study of the Chinese, study of Chinese culture, language, it's called the sinology. And in Chinese, it will be Han Xue, the study of the Han. And Han Yu, that's the Chinese language, Mandarin, as opposed to the other ethnic languages. Any questions so far? So that's the definition there, right? Now,
what about the Cantonese?
Yeah, the Cantonese, they are...
from South China? Or?
Yeah, they are Mandarin Chinese. But that brings up a very good question. Even the Han Chinese, they are very diversified because there are Hakka people who have totally different cultures from the other Han Chinese. Since I wrote the book about the tales, I have the introductions in the front. About the tales themselves, what do the tales tell us? First, let's see how the Chinese view the world. The tales can tell us something, right? Can tell us about what the early people thought of the world, thought of themselves, thought of their neighbors. In China, there are quite a few different Genesis stories, not just one. The most famous one is the Pangu, who used to live in an egg of chaos, a huge egg, I guess, a chaos, and now he struggled out of it. He grew, and the air on top of him becomes lighter and becomes the sky, and the earth becomes... You see the yin and yang, the positive and the negative thing all started very, very early, the yin and yang. So, until he grew so tall and so that they wouldn't be able to join together anyway. Okay, this is another story. A woman who created humans out of mud. And later, when part of the sky fell and there was a big flood, the flood story is analogous to the biblical flood. And then she tried to mend the sky, and both died of fatigue. But different Genesis stories, they still are side by side. What does that tell us? I imagine it could be they're the cultural baggages brought in by different tribes of people, right? And then now they assimilate into each other. And that also shows the tolerance of different ideas. It's not one suppressing the other, right? This is the big egg. This is the pangu, see that? So some artists today just try to render it into the artistic form. And the world was born of an egg of chaos, and the earth is square. They think the earth is square. And the sky is like a tent, and popped up by the pillars. By pillars of what? Some legends go that by the legs of a giant turtle. Some early gods and goddesses were half human, half animals, a snake. This is Nuwa, the goddess of creation. They both died. So the early gods and goddesses were mortal. Even when they died, they still tried to benefit the people. For instance, Pangu, the guy who separated the sky and the earth, when he died, his breast becomes the rain or mist, his eyes, one eye, the sun, the other, the moon, and then his bones, the mountains, the blood, the river, whatever. Okay? Even the lices on his body become the humans. How do they view the spiritual world? This table shows how the Chinese religions developed, right? At a very early stage, you see the 500 BC, they have the pre-classical religion, and then the popular Chinese religion. I will talk a little bit more about that, the Chinese popular religion. And then you have the Confucianism, you have the Taoism, and legalism, whatever, Buddhism. Islam came a little bit later in the 7th century, and I believe Buddhism came at the 1st century, and Christianity coming at the 8th century, and then all the others. Early Chinese religious beliefs, I wouldn't call it religion, just beliefs, they thought that everything has a supernatural power. Animals, plants, and also in the process of birth, aging, and death. So that's why in a collection of stories by this guy, Pu Songling, between 16th and 17th century, he got more than 400 stories of spirits of everything. Spirits of fox, animals, flowers. Over here, you see the foxes. The early Chinese believe that people die,
their soul can only survive if their body can survive. So that's why they bury their body very carefully. Even today, you see, this corpse, the tissue is still soft. She was 2,200 years old. They just dug her up. And these are tombs of an emperor and her empress side by side. And this guy is one of the famous Chinese immortals, Ba Xian. He was limp. When his body was kind of in a sleep, his spirit went somewhere to do some business. His certain thought he was dead, so burn his body. When his spirit came back, there's nowhere to go. So he found a corpse of a dead beggar who was a limp by chance. So that's why he got his body. They also believe the funeral ritual must be right. This is also one of the Confucian thinking rituals. Because if you don't bury the dead properly, their soul become ghosts and will haunt the living. So that's why you find the stories in the book here. You all know the Great Wall, right? The Great Wall today is a pride of the Chinese, but when it was first built, it was a misery for the Chinese who were driven there and built it. So one guy was sent there to build the Great Wall, but died soon. His wife went up north to look for him by food. When she found him, he was only a heap of bone buried in the Great Wall. Because too many people died and so they just buried them in the wall. So she cried and cried until a big chunk of the Great Wall collapsed, exposing the bones. The emperor, of course, wanted to kill her because she collapsed the wall. But when he saw that she was so pretty, she wants to have her as his concubine. But she had a plan. She said, well, you have to bury my husband properly. She killed herself eventually, but have the emperor to agree to bury her husband properly, because that's very, very important. All right. Okay, now we come to the Chinese popular religion. It is not a religion. It's only a mixture of thinking. It's not structured. It's not the systematic. It's just kind of all sorts of beliefs, even superstitions, coming together. And there are hundreds of different gods, goddesses, immortals, demigods, half god, half human, and hypothesized historical figures. Like all these people used to be human beings. For some strange reasons, they became immortalized. The Chinese popular religion is characterized by the worship of idols. So when you go to a Chinese restaurant, when you go to a Chinese grocery, you may first find an altar, right? And some gods in there, right? This is the story, the magic lotus lantern. This is the lantern. This is the boy. This is the mother. And the mother was encased in a mountain because she married a mortal husband and gave birth to a demigod child, like here. Her brother didn't like that, so tried to separate them. And because of this lantern, gave them a big power, the magic power. At first, he couldn't beat them, so he stole it. Using his magic dog and stole it, and then encased her in the big mountain. When he grew up, he used the magic axe given by a Taoist and cleft the mountain open, rescued the mother. Temple, there was an altar, there was a statue like this. All right, that's how the mother got acquainted with the father, because the father was on his way to the capital to take imperial civil examination, which is a topic I will come back to, the examination. On his way, he wanted to make a wish, and prayed at the altar. He said, well, let me succeed, right? But she was busy running around to cure people of an epidemic. So the altar has only the statue, but there's nothing in there. So it didn't answer him. So he got mad. He wrote a poem criticizing her. So she punished him when she came back by big rains and got him sick. Since she was so compassionate, she rescued him and they fell in love. And you know. The Chinese popular religion also incorporate the elements of other religions, like immortality from Taoism, reincarnation from Buddhism. Ho Yi, this is his wife, the goddess of moon. Ho Yi shot down 9 of the 10 suns, which scorched the earth. Because all the 10 suns tried to come up together one day, and that created a big disaster. So he shot 9 of them, he became a hero. When he was in heaven, he accidentally shot dead a son of the heavenly king.
So as a punishment, he sent him down to earth to live as a mortal, which means he's going to die, together with his wife, also going to die. So they have to get something to make them live forever, to get a pill of immortality from the Queen Mother of the West. You see that idea, immortality?
And this one, the piggy, over here, this is a big, huge story in China
from a Chinese classic. This is the piggy, because that's part of the story of a Monkey King. You may have heard of the Monkey King, which is as famous as Mickey Mouse in America. Every Chinese old and young know Monkey King and the piggy. So why piggy? Because he used to be a handsome general in heaven, but he committed harassment. There was harassment in China in those days too. So he committed harassment. He tried to harass the moon god. As a punishment, he was made reborn on the earth. By some freaky accident, he was reborn into the womb of a pig, so now he became a pig.
The reincarnation, right?
Buddhism also had a great impact on Chinese mythology, Chinese tales, thinking. It came to China in the first century and became popular 200 years later. And the objective of the Buddhism to reach nirvana, which means the end of suffering. And the suffering comes from where? From your desires. If you don't have desires, then you don't have sufferings. So you have to meditate. So that's why these two goddesses, they used to be human beings, and then they just meditate until they became goddesses.
Taoism is credited to Lao Tzu, you all know that, right? According to Taoism, the whole world is just one big thing. Just has two sides, the yin and yang.
Even life and death is the yin and yang of one thing. There's a lot of stories in China. People can come back and forth from death.
This is a nice story. Oh, by the way, it's a story about cricket fighting.
You may have heard of bull fighting, chicken fighting, and dog fighting. You have never heard of cricket fighting, right? I did that when I was young, before the computer game appeared, right? And no computer games at that time.
So, you see the two little crickets?
They're males.
And here is the old man and the young man. They're entertaining themselves by fighting those crickets in the little yard.
Now, the story goes like this. Long time ago, there's an emperor. He also loved cricket fighting. When an ordinary person loves cricket fighting, that's fine. But when an emperor loves it, that's a disaster. So his subordinates try to give him the best crickets in the world. So they collect them as a tax, and the people suffer. The magistrates send people to get the crickets, and they just get it from the people. Okay, I can buy them.
And so it was the people who suffer. So this guy looked for the crickets. Finally, he got one. His young son, who was so curious, he just opened the jar, wanted to take a look at it, but the cricket ran away. So in a haste to catch it, he squashed it.
There. So he was so remorseful that he just jumped into a well and drowned himself and killed himself. He couldn't face his father. He said, what shall I do?
His father just fished him out.
But strange things happened. While he was lying on the bed, a little cricket chirped in the room, and instead of the father catching him, he caught his father, just jumped onto his father. So his father just took him, said it's very small, but said, oh, anyway, it's better than nothing, right? So he tried to test it. And sure enough, he even could fight a chicken who wants to eat him. Because it's not a cricket.
So he was sent to the emperor, and the emperor was so happy because he can even dance.
After a period of time, the boy just came back and said, oh my god, I had such a good time fighting roosters and dancing for the emperor. That's him.
So life and death, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, Chinese believe in heaven. Heaven is personified by Yu Huang Da Di. They call it Jade Emperor of Heaven, or the Emperor of Heaven. And this is what the Chinese perceive as the heaven.
It's a different idea, it's a paradise. It's heaven, up there, okay?
The heaven is the mirror of the mundane world. We have a king, they have a king. The king has concubines, that emperor has concubines.
They have courtiers, ministers, they have the same thing, but it's in heaven, right?
And also worshiping ancestry. The worship of ancestry has to do with the soul of the dead. The soul of the dead, the concept of yin and yang. If you worship your ancestry properly, the soul of the dead will become a hun,
the spirit.
That may protect you. If I don't, then it becomes a ghost to haunt me. This is the chairman of the nationalists of Taiwan. Just recently came back to China, prayed to her mother. Part of this is the family line, carried on by sons, not girls. So you would see in the ancient motifs, all the chubby boys, not the girls. Uh-huh. So that's why the Chinese is obsessed with having boys. So that's why they have a large population. They'll have girls, 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 until they have a boy. This is a Mazu. Mazu is a goddess of sailors and worshipped by Taiwan people and people in China and Chinese people all over the world. Before she was born, she already had a brother. What if something happened to that son and the line would be broken? So they go to the temple, prayed and prayed to the goddess of mercy, Guan Yin, and finally they make her pregnant, but it turned out to be a girl. She later became a goddess. This is the goddess of earth, also appear in my stories. This is the god of wealth. This used to be a general in the three warring states. Usually Chinese generals didn't have much learning, but this guy was an exception, so that's why he was worshipped. He's holding a book. He could fight, he could also read. And now he became god of wealth, too. When you go to China, go to a restaurant, you will see him in every restaurant to bring wealth to them. Every city has a god. Every well has a god. Everything has a god. This is Xi Wangmu, the queen mother of the West. There are different legends about her. She has a leopard tail, a tiger's teeth, but later she was humanized, a beautiful lady. Some legends go that she was the mother of the Jade Emperor. She was the goddess of life and death. She was the one the Hou Yi went to get the pills of immortality. And all kinds of immortals, and these eight together were the most famous because of a nice story you can read in the book. Fighting the dragons and stuff, and finally they reconciliated, just like fighting for nothing, that's just like a children. So this story will tell us, fighting is childish. This is Kitchen God. You know how did that happen? Kitchen God used to be a human, but he squandered all his wealth by gambling, by doing bad stuff. He got two wives, he sold one, and one just left him. And then he went begging. And then he came to the door where he saw his wife. His wife happened to see him, became compassionate. So women were forgiving. So just invited men, but she couldn't show to the master's family, just hid him in the kitchen and fed him. Since he was so greedy, while he was eating a chicken, half cooked, he was choked to death. So his wife had to bury him in the ashes of a big stove. And then she started to pray. And when the master came and said, "What are you doing?" She was quick-minded. She wouldn't tell the true story. She said, "Well, I'm praying in front of the stove. Because of the stove, we had such a good life every day, right?" And the master said, "Oh, that's a good idea. So every year we should pray to the stove." So that's the origin of the kitchen god. Now, Confucian influence, of course. Basically, it's to teach people to be good, to teach emperors to be good. And then later, in competing with Taoism, the Zhuxi came out and established this Neo-Confucian ideas. And these ideas include a lot of stuff. Maybe we can't go over one of them. One is Ren, benevolence, Yi, righteousness, Li, propriety, and Zhi, learning, Xin, honesty, and Zhong, loyalty to the state, and Xiao, loyalty, dutiful to parents. All these are ideas of the Neo-Confucianism. Now from the stories you can see, this monk is epitome of benevolence. He couldn't kill anybody, even the demons. So that created a lot of trouble for his disciples, especially for the Monkey King. For that, he suffered a lot. Now Yi, righteousness. You have seen a hero, right? That comes from a story, that's the original story was in my book. And the guy tries to kill Emperor Qin. He would rather die to uphold righteousness. So, and that guy also is the epitome of Chinese justice. Here's another story. She was married to this guy until she was divorced by the parents, not the guy. The guy was still in love. But the guy has to be dutiful, has to listen to the parents. And Zhi, this is a original house where people took exams. The examination system, it started from the 501 and ended in 1911. During all those over 2,000 years, that was the only way a Chinese man can have social mobility. If you want to be better, you have to study and then go to take the exam. You have regional and national exam. And the number one will have a chance to marry sometimes the daughter of the emperor and became the person who is under none but the emperor. And you have the Xin, the honesty and trustworthiness. And this guy delivered a letter for a dragon princess who was punished for doing something good. So he did that by sacrificing himself. And also the Zhong loyalty to the superior, to the state. The whole family died for the emperor. And they were still wronged, but still they felt that, well, the emperor was right. And Mulan, you all know Mulan, right? Fighting for the emperor. The Zhong. And Xiao, of course. You have a lot of people who are Xiao. You have this. You see this woman? He was in mourning for her husband's parents. And the husband lied to the emperor and married his daughter, living a good life, forgetting about them. So, but still, he was in mourning for the parents of her husband. So that's Xiao. This guy has to listen to the mother to divorce her beloved wife. Because that's Xiao. This little guy tried to save her mother, right? And he died because he felt so remorseful because he did something wrong to his parents. Yeah, the cricket. And he died, he committed suicide because his parents were in a very difficult situation when the dragons tried to kill all the people. If you want your son, all the people. And the son said, well, I go. View of women. Confucian stresses vertical relationship, not horizontally, okay? How we deal with each other. But they do this. They say, oh, emperor is emperor, subject is subject, father is father, son is son. Nobody can switch place, okay? And regarding women, the Neo-Confucian advocates sangang, which means a ruler guides his subject, a father his children, and the husband his wife. You know, when the husband dies, who guides her? The son. Yeah. And Qi Chu, seven reasons a man can divorce wife. Infertility, adultery, disobedience, quarrelsomeness, taking something to her own parents' home. Jealousy and serious illness, that's inhumane. Now you have the stories in there that were telling us. The views of women from the mainstream culture and the folk tales were polarized. On this side, you will see women as lustful and blamed for the fall of dynasties. You have the stories here. Deceiving, you have the stories here. They have like a pawn you can send away for the sake of the country. And the bearer of men's heir, a victim of sexuality, a beauty on the painting, this story. A beauty is deceitful and so on. But in the folktale, common people will think of them as capable as a man, like a Mulan, right? And a victim of a repression, they fight them even though they die in the end. A devotion to love, Meng Jiang would take such a trouble to go to find her husband. And forgiving, even though they're wronged, they still forgave. And dare to challenge social norms, a victim of man's selfishness. When you say Mr. Dongguo Xianxian, every Chinese will know what this means. It becomes a part of a Chinese language. Mr. Dongguo means someone who is kind-hearted to even to their enemies, foolishly. And Chen Shimei, that's the guy who married the emperor's daughter, forsaking her own children and wife, and even tried to kill them. And the Bai Gujing, if you mention Bai Gujing is some, especially a pretty girl who is trying to get somebody else's husband. That's a Bai Gujing. Hong Yang is a matchmaker. Hua Pi is someone who's deceitful. And all the other proverbial 12 proverbial stories all have a moral to tell. And thank you very much. Questions? Try to make it within an hour. Thank you for your patience. Yes.
Going back to where the you said they had to properly bury mm-hmm. bodies and preserve yeah. the bodies. Mm-hmm. What do they do in a situation to where the body, you know, died in such a way it cannot be preserved?
I see. That's a good question. Sometimes they will bury their clothes. Like the guy, the general, yeah. They have several tombs. One tomb has his head, he's beheaded. One tomb has his body, and one tomb has his clothes only. Yeah. Even Sun Yat-sen, the first president of the Chinese Republic, the one who led the revolution against the Qing Dynasty in the 1911, he got two tombs, one in Beijing, one in Nanjing. One is the real body, one is his clothes. Any other questions?
What about this ruler who had the statuary of an army with horses and everything buried, and that was something discovered in the 20th century?
Yes, yes.
Who was that?
That was the first emperor. When I was in Florida, I was went to a theme park, and they told Disney, they told me that, that's a park near Disney, not Disney itself. They told me the story that the emperor wanted to bury his real army and soldiers and horses. And his minister said, well, if you do that, what about our country here? So can we just make some replicas? I said, okay. So make replicas of the real people. So each statue looks different from another. And they bury them.
And
that was in the 207 or something. And that's 2,000 years ago. Yes?
Other questions?
Any other questions? Thank you for coming for attention.